It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 734, or day 65 in captivity. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Mike Tech Show. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can leave a voicemail message on Skype. The name is Mike Tech Show, all one word. And we have a voicemail that I'll be playing first as soon as we take care of business. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow, and also facebook.com/miketechshow. This show is brought to you by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow for your free 15-day trial. You can also directly go to instanthousecall.com. And remember, if you mention that you heard it on the Mike Tech Show, your first 3 months are half price. As a matter of fact, my son right now is doing Windows 10 upgrades, you know, for the updates and making sure all the software and everything's updated. He's doing that on Instant House Call from one of my biggest clients for their entire engineering department. We do this once a month where I pause updates for the month and then we do it in a controlled environment. He's doing that right now and using Instant House Call. This show is also brought to you by Magnus Box. Go to magnusbox.com and try a demo of your secured online backups for your clients. They deal with partners only. It is HIPAA compliant. It works across all platforms. And if you mention you heard it on the Mike Tech Show, you will also get your first 3 months free. I have every client that wants online backups, whether it's servers, whether it's workstations, if it's Linux, Mac. You're going to love the first voicemail that's going to be the key to helping Macs that go to sleep where you want your Mac backed up online, or should I say your clients. So give them a try. It's great. I use it for my clients, and they now have the new backup plan, Magnus Box One, where it combines all their past plans into one and makes it extremely easy for partners. Check them out, magnusbox.com. I have a great show for today, and I got a lot to talk about. I'm going to get on my soapbox for a couple minutes, and I got to bash a couple things. There's a conference that I am so mad at the response of this virtual conference back to my company and my son and I being tormented and tortured. So we're going to talk about guerrilla marketing tactics and how they don't work. I got to talk about a Microsoft story where I spent 2.5 hours on the phone with an engineer for the problem that I talked about with that Outlook delay that I couldn't solve. Even though it's not solved yet, that's okay. I have gained some incredible links that I'm going to share with you for tools that I didn't even know existed that is you're going to put in, have in your arsenal, in your tool bag as you resolve and tackle complex Outlook and Exchange problems. I have a third monitor I added here that I'm going to talk about. Laptop repairs, a couple more stories in the trenches for fixes that I applied. Boy, this is going to be a long show. And then I have a stack of email I got to get to. So that's today's show. Let's begin with this voicemail from Scott.
Hi, Mike. This is Scott from Virginia. On one of your previous shows, you mentioned using a third-party piece of software on the Macs you manage to schedule them to wake up and go back to sleep overnight so that they could be online for backups to run. Did you know that macOS has this functionality built in? To access the settings, go to System Preferences and then the Energy Saver section. Hidden in the lower right-hand corner is a button that says Schedule. Clicking that will reveal a panel where you can choose an action and then select the time and days you want to run. I hope this helps, and keep up the great work with the show. I've been listening since the beginning.
Scott, that is an amazing tip. Because one of the annoying things on a Mac is they go to sleep and you, and in the inappropriate times, especially like if you have an online backup that has to be scheduled. This is brilliant. Scott, you've just saved me for Mac clients on waking them up at on a schedule. I love it. Love it. That's what this show's all about, is the tips and tricks. And that's tremendous. So thank you. All right. On to my story, which I mentioned several weeks ago, this problem began. My client is an Outlook 365 apps. So we're talking Outlook 365. It's a law firm. There's like 8 users total. Nobody else is experiencing this problem. So they're hosted Exchange on Sherweb. I tried everything. A lot of you wrote in things for me to try. I was pulling my hairs out. I contacted Sherweb. They got involved, giving me things to try, having me, you know, even recording what happened using the PTR and then sending that to them so they could pass it on to Microsoft. Yesterday, I connected with a tech from Microsoft who we both remoted into the client. We spent 2.5 hours. We did not fix the problem, but we know exactly where the problem is. Let me describe, and I'm going to put in the show notes the links that I'm going to talk about. I'm also going to put in the chat room for everybody that's here. There's a series of 3 links. There's a utility that I've never used that we had to download after we had tried everything. Now, remember, this, to fix the problem, a couple weeks ago, my son actually, we totally redid the system. We took out the SSD, put a brand new one in, installed Windows 10 from scratch, downloaded a fresh Outlook 365, you know, the whole Office 365, set up email, and it still delays. It's delayed like 2.5 minutes, sometimes longer, but the average is 2.5 minutes. And the messages don't go right away. Very annoying to my client. All of the users there are on the same hosted Exchange server. No one else has the problem. The first link is this MFC Mappy utility. You click on the right now, the April 2017 release. And if you scroll down, the executable is based on whether your Office is 32-bit or 64-bit. This particular client, it's 32-bit. And this 32-bit is because there are other add-ins that have to be 32-bit. So that's the only reason this client is 32-bit Office. But the operating system is 64-bit. Okay. So you download the proper executable. Next link is how to handle this, and I did not know. And I, be like I said, be very, all these links that I'm giving you, you make sure you have a full image backup of the system. These are very dangerous utilities, and you got to know what you're doing. And I strongly recommend that if you want to execute these utilities, you do it on a test system with your own hosted Exchange account, whether it be at Microsoft or a third party. Do not go into this blindly and start doing things. Read everything and be careful. As I always say, the mantra, backup, backup, backup. You do not do this without a backup of the system. The first is a description. Well, the first is the utility. The next link is how to delete junk email rules by using the MFC Mappy in an Exchange server environment. I thought that I was pretty good with Outlook and Exchange. And I have never used these utilities. So be very, very careful. And I'm going to go into, right now I'm cutting and pasting the links. I think I duplicated the one. Let me get the third link right now. And by the way, the tech, and I'm not going to give his name because I don't think that's fair, was very patient, extremely smart, knew what he was doing, and we dived deep into trying to repair this. The next link, and this is amazing because I didn't know that there could be hidden exchange inbox rules and how to delete corrupted hidden exchange inbox rules. Because could there be a hidden rule that's delaying the email? I love the approach because it's something that I would have never thought of and had no idea how to do. And it's why I'm sharing them in case you run into this. We did all these things. No joy. Didn't fix the problem. Created a new profile. No joy. So tech starts thinking, he wants me, even though I did this once, to create my user's profile on the test system right behind me. The monitor that you see right behind me, that test system, I have a profile set up for this user, and I tried to send a test message, and it was delayed 2.5 minutes. Now, we go and create a new profile, only we add my mike@mhsconsulting.net, which I am also a SureWeb user, and I add that profile, and it's on his Outlook, on his system, and the messages go instantaneously. So now we add to that profile my client's email account. I can send quickly. His sits in the inbox, in the outbox for 2.5 minutes. What did we just prove? We proved that this problem is on the SureWeb server. Now, what I don't understand is why is it not impacting the rest of the users from that domain that are all on that same server. But there's a problem with this user's account on that server. We've now passed and continued the ticket back in SureWeb land for the techs, and I haven't communicated with them yet. I suspect that'll be on Monday. And what I'm going to ask them to do is to schedule a migration of all the users on that domain, since it's only 8, and let's schedule that off hours where they migrate their exchange mailboxes to a different server where there's new fresh accounts, move the data over, and let's see if that works. Or is there something that SureWeb can do that I don't have access to dig deep in the exchange server for that user? Now, if this was an on-premise exchange server, I would back up his email, I would delete the account, I'd recreate a new one, and I'd import the mail back. That's what I would do if I had control of the server. But I don't. This is hosted, and it's a very limited panel that I have access to for controlling exchange settings for this company. As a matter of fact, something I have learned now that I got users on Microsoft's Office 365, I have more granular control using Microsoft's panel for managing Microsoft-hosted email in comparison to SureWeb's. Now, I purchase everything using SureWeb, where I'm a partner, but I don't have the control. So it's starting to make me rethink where I may still use SureWeb to set up new accounts, but I may go straight for the Office 365 and the hosted Exchange email there because of the control. When I have a couple users on that, and when I dig down into the Exchange settings, boy, I got way more options where I'm at the mercy of SureWeb tech support if I need a change that I have control over in Microsoft, but I don't have control on SureWeb. So just some advice that if you're using third party for exchange, host it, this is a reason to maybe go the Microsoft way. Everybody listening is saying, Mike, oh my gosh, you've bashed Microsoft, you know. And I think anybody from Microsoft would agree, the way they've handled Windows 10 updates, you know, disgraceful, just disgraceful. It's horrible what we are living with for the pain and suffering for the Windows 10 updates. But when it comes to Office, Outlook is, you know, they've made some changes to the search, and that's driving me crazy with some clients and stuff. It's the updates, and I think the lack of testing that's been a problem, and it's always updates it comes back to. But from a functionality standpoint of the admin portal for Office 365 Business, that is the way to go on Microsoft. And when you see the difference, you will agree. Now, something I forgot to do is I said I would get on my soapbox, but I wanted to cover that voicemail, and I wanted to cover my Microsoft, which again, I'll follow up on this story hopefully by next week, and there's going to be a resolution here. But at least we know it's not Outlook and it's not the Windows operating system, which was just driving us crazy. It's specific to that one user. Thought, yes, Kins in the chat asked a great question, and I don't know. So that's where we're going to need the help from Sherweb to tell us what, you know, they got to dig deeper and they can't pass the buck. So it's now clearly in their ballpark here to solve this for me. Soapbox. Because of the virus and everything, conferences are now virtual. I get it. You know, that's how it should be. And sometimes when my son and I are here in the office, we have not downtime, but if we're not on the phone and we're doing some work, it'd be great to put on a computer, have the speakers going of a conference. Hey, let's learn something. Let's explore something. So I had my son register for the Channel Pro virtual conference a week ago. Big mistake. I'll never do that again. I've attended physically conferences and have never been tormented and tortured post-conference like we have been from this past one. Every vendor called. Now, I get it. That's why they're doing it. Yes. But to call me several times a day, each of them, and even though I was rude and ignorant and hung up on them, they would call back. That is a disgrace. So there's one vendor who called, and I explained. And as a matter of fact, I'm gonna throw them under the bus. MSP 365, the backup. Now, I told them several times I am not interested. So when he called me the other morning this week, I said, I now will never, you could be the only product in the world to back up. And I will still boycott you and will never, ever use your product again. It could be the greatest thing in the world. But because of your guerrilla marketing tactics, I will not purchase it. And I'm going to share this information. And that's what I'm doing here. I get to use my platform for my opinion. And let me tell you, where we've been tortured by ConnectWise, I'm not going to dime out every vendor, but just take a look at the Channel Pro list and you're going to see. It was horrible, horrible. As they call, as we unsubscribe from stuff, my son, they're calling him. They're now, and the emails that I'm getting. Now, we're already getting crushed with different emails from every vendor. Everybody who's selling something, take a step back. People who are in lockdown, who are being crushed with their phone ringing and multiple spam emails, it's not going to work. As a matter of fact, it's going to be the exact opposite effect on someone like me. And I may share this with tens of thousands of people to share this opinion. It's going to backfire. Think of your marketing tactics. Don't torture, even when I get a referral. I give one phone call. And if I don't hear back, I don't call them back until I contact the person who referred them to me. Said, hey, I haven't back. I will not torture and torment a prospective client. They're not going to be happy. It's the wrong process for marketing. Just now I get off my soapbox. I vent it, and that's what I needed to do. Couple more things I need to share. So File Explorer for a client, it stopped working. The search stopped working. And I never thought about this, which is a great little article that I'm going to have in the show notes. And this is File Explorer search not working in Windows 10. What you have to do, go to fix one, which is restart File Explorer, open up Task Manager, look in the processes for Windows Explorer, right click and pick restart. The whole screen will change. It'll restart. Search started working. Now, why did it break in the first place? I don't know. But this is a quick, easy fix, and I wanted to share that with you. I knew to do that. So what I had to do is find a link that I could share to describe what to do. And it's got a nice picture. Plus, there's other things to try there, but it was fix one that I wanted to focus on. Another one, how to stop Windows 10 from reopening your previous applications after restarting your PC. I had to find this and send the link to a user that was frustrated when he restarts Windows 10. Everything opens up and he's like, I don't want this to happen. Stop it. Stop it. This is the answer. So it goes through step by step where you got to go into settings and then you got to go to sign in options and then you have to turn on, the use my sign in info to automatically finish setting up my device and reopen my apps after an update or restart. Okay, got to turn that off. And then how to stop Windows from reopening folders. This is where you got to go in File Explorer, go to the view, go to options, and then in the options, you got to go then to view, and then there's a checkbox to uncheck restore previous folder Windows at login, and you make sure that's unchecked. So with some of these problems that I write down and I like to share, this week we've been incredibly busy. A big uptick in system sales. Sold 3 new systems this week. As a matter of fact, I'm out. I got to replenish my, I don't stock a lot, but since the virus, since, you know, COVID-19 hit, I had 6 systems here and now I'm down to 0. So 3 of them went this week. So very, very surprised. Matter of fact, I found a source for monitors. I love Samsung and I got 2 more being delivered today from FedEx. So I've been having trouble tracking down products. Something I don't know if I talked about on a past show, beware of webcams that are not Logitech. I bought an off-brand. I bought 3 of them, and they shipped quickly. And they were only $59. They said high def, but it was an off-brand, and I can't believe they didn't work with Skype. How can you not work with Skype and you're a video camera on Windows 10? And I tried it on multiple systems. One of them I had already given to a client. I sold. I had to take that back. All 3 of them, I've been refunded. And that's it. I told myself I will only buy Logitech webcams. But unfortunately, the prices are way up and it's very hard to get them. But check eBay. Look for new products being sold on eBay from trusted suppliers that have positive ratings. So that's what I've been doing with a couple products that I've been able to get. They were new. I was happy and never thought I'd be buying like that from eBay, but just wanted to, hey, give you another option to go search. Let's start. I want to get this. This is an email that I got this morning from Dexter, regular listener. Hi, Mike. Thanks for the great shows during the shutdown. Have a problem. Have a client who got Microsoft Office 365 Business Essentials with their ISP connection package, 10 seats. This lets you use the web apps only. He wants to use the Outlook app. His email is through GoDaddy, and another vendor is in control of that. Looks to be set up for IMAP in the current desktop Outlook. The desktop Outlook versions are old, 2007 and 2010. How do you get Web Outlook to set up for these GoDaddy IMAP accounts? Let's say the domain email name is example.com to protect the innocent. Thanks for your help. Be safe. Dexter, be safe also. I don't have an answer for that. So looking for help, how do you configure? I have never used the Outlook Essentials apps for configuring that Outlook where it's just web-based only. How do you configure that for IMAP? I have not done that. I will do some research. I'll try to come up with a link, post it up next week, and I'll reply to Dexter. But if you have some links or can share some help for me, then that would be great. I will get that in the hands of Dexter right away, and then I'll mention it on the next show. Thank you. This is from Kino. Just wanted to give a shout out from London, England, and to let you know how much we value your fantastic insight and tech tips. I have listened to your show religiously for a couple of years now, and the way you communicate is sometimes complicated in this complicated world of IT is awesome. I just think you are a total dude. I appreciate that. Thank you. I work for a small IT company based in North London, Enfield, and so many times an issue you talk about on your show, we have the same issues a week or so later, and I'm able to successfully troubleshoot. Anyway, I just wanted to share a great tool you could let your listeners know about. It's called Ventoy, and it is a multi-boot USB tool. Watch a video from Brightech that explains how to create it. I will post that video in the show notes. It's a great tool for just adding and removing ISO files on the fly, and you don't have to keep creating them. Keep it going, dude. Loving what you do. One more thing. Fabs Auto Backup. What a great tool. Oh, pick this up from listening to you and use it all the time. Kindest thanks and regards. Kino, thank you. Checking in from the UK. And yes, Fabs Auto Backup 7 Pro is an incredible utility that the links in the show notes where you can transfer your customers' data, your data, and the settings for a lot of programs. And something it does now for Microsoft Edge, if it downloads a utility, it will export all of the Edge settings to a file on the desktop. So as we see the uptick of more users using Edge, and you want to transfer from one system to another system, how do you do that? You can export everything to a file, and then it's very easy to open up Edge, go to the settings, go import, and import from that file on the desktop that Fabs will put there. Something else Fabs is doing that I really, really, really like. They will check now if you have a Malwarebytes license, and they will export the key and put the key in a text file. Now, you got to be diligent in deactivating if you can. Now, I've run into problems where the system is not, it crashed, and there's just no way to deactivate it. But if you open a support ticket with Malwarebytes with that key, they will rearm it for you. So that's good to know, and I wanted to share that. And I've had to do that a couple times with some keys where the system died, but you don't want to lose the license that they paid for. You want to be able to transfer that to another system. This email's from Don, and it's about PCI compliance. Mike, you've discussed the various kinds of compliance, PCI, FINRA, HIPAA, and probably others, on your program many times. A customer of mine takes credit cards via several means. In the past, I have tightened up the firewall rules so their network passed the monthly external scans. Recently, they asked me to complete the annual self-assessment questionnaire. The self-assessment process goes something like this. Initial questions establish how you take credit cards and how your network is set up. Then comes dozens of questions or hundreds depending on how you answer the initial questions. I have a great way to look at this that I think is going to simplify your life. He continues, they ask about how you maintain the security of your systems. Some things I've never heard of. An example, file integrity monitoring, a software security tool that monitors certain files and logs to detect when they have been modified. Customer also has to log everything on their system, including antivirus logs, failed logins, who made administrative changes, when, how, and logs are to be reviewed daily and maintained for a year. Are you being slammed by all these requirements, or is it something you have been dealing with for years? I have been dealing with this for a long time, and I'm going to explain. He has the customer runs what is referred to as an FBO, fixed-based operator, at a small airport and does credit card processing via network-connected credit card machine at the front desk, USB-connected card reader connected to a PC in the office, which is logged into a website, which I believe is referred to as a virtual terminal. A USB-connected card reader connected to a laptop, which is connected to an iPhone for internet access in a fuel truck. A cover system in the cafe, a clover system in the cafe. They used to store credit card information in QuickBooks. Oh boy, I don't recommend that. Which generated dozens of things they would have to do to secure their data. Thank goodness they figured they could write down the few credit card numbers they need versus put them in QuickBooks. But you know, when you write down a credit card, that breaks some of the PCI compliance. And it's got to be maintained of where it's securely stored, who has access to that. If you write down a credit card number, your work just quadrupled on the policies, the procedures that you have to completely document. I have a better solution. A lot of those things you don't have to do if you define the scope of where you're taking the credit cards and how. First off, we know you got to segment the network. Nobody should be using a computer for anything else other than the credit card. Right off the bat, separate them. You got to isolate the networks that are just using the credit card, even if it means having a separate router at the end or partitioning it with a separate static IP address, you must isolate and separate all the machines that are taking credit cards. They should have static IP addresses. Nobody should be able to plug into that segment. You got to have that all secured. Now, the app that they're processing their credit cards, that's the app, that is the company that has to say they are PCI compliant, and you get, I believe it's a SAS 70 document that has to be provided by the vendor that guarantees they are PCI compliant. So take a look. Do you have to watch the files that are being? No, unless they are storing them in a file on the network, which I hope they are not, then those things come into play. But it is not applicable for monitoring the files if the files are all stored across the internet in another company. That means they are not sitting. So now you just got to make sure that network and that computer is isolated. It is secured. It is updated regularly. It has, you know, a good anti-malware antivirus program. The hard drive's encrypted. Make sure it's looked at on a regular basis and tested and examined, and you write off that all of these are happening. Yes, that's work, but I think it's less than what they're doing now and what you are reading now. If you want more help, Don, reach out to me, email me. You can email me on the Mike Tech Show, you know, at gmail.com. I have a very good consultant to consultant rate that if you want some advice, I can help you. And I've done this for other consultants who are listeners and help them out with different clients. And I might be able to give you a take. But the big thing, and this happened, I learned a great lesson in the corporate world where we had to do the Sarbanes-Oxley compliance. I think I talked about this. I had a server farm of over 200 servers until we eventually went to Blade servers. But now I got 200 servers in the data center. But the servers that controlled and reported on the financials of the business were two. So all of our policies, all of our procedures were just about maintaining, locking down, and protecting two, not 200. And we early on defined that scope of the systems that are impacted. It changed our workload and reduced it incredibly from what we were beginning to plan versus what we were had to report on and the procedures. Now, we were always doing what they were asking to do. I was just doing that naturally as part of being the enterprise network manager. My procedures and policies were exactly in line with SOX, but I wasn't doing something. I was not signing off on each of the reports daily and weekly, literally adding a procedure that I signed off on, that I reviewed it, made us compliant. So we were doing all the hard work. We just weren't signing what we were doing. Here is the big thing. You need to say what you're going to do and do what you say and document it all. That what I am documenting, I am obeying and executing. And then, of course, aligning it with that questionnaire. And that questionnaire meant tough questions sometimes, but I want you to constantly think of not their whole enterprise so much as defining the scope of the systems that are impacted by this, and then isolating that, and then applying the procedures, the rules, the checks to that group that you've isolated. That's my 5-10 minute, you know, you could spend years learning about compliance, but I just wanted to give you an overview of my approach. This is from Alistair, who has his own podcast, and it's IPv6 and fire alarms. As always, thanks for the great show. A listener email on episode 728 asked about the UK broadband provider PlusNet and IPv6 and using their own router. I am using PlusNet UK and use my own router. They don't natively offer IPv6 address. You could use something like Hurricane Electric to get IPv6 network connectivity over IPv4. We talk about the question on episode 82 on the Admin podcast. Al, thank you so much. Great podcast, the Admin podcast. If you don't listen to it, tune in, subscribe. I'm going to list the link to episode 82 where he discusses that. And now I got to find the email that led to that question, and I'll reply back with this link. Al, thank you. Hyper-V VM to ISO. This is from AY. I was wondering if there is an easy way to convert a Hyper-V VM to a bootable ISO. I have a Windows install that I am setting up to use in my daily driver, and I don't see any good way online to make this bootable. Thanks. I am going to reach out to our expert, Winston Wolf, who is as you know, he is the master of virtualization, and I will pose that question to him and get an answer. If anybody else has a way to do that, let me know. That's it for today's show. Remember, the best way to support the Mike Tech Show and Tech Vets, Carrie Holzman and myself, use our shared Amazon link. It is in the show notes of every show. Click on that link. It'll bring you to Amazon. Now, add your items to the cart. When you pay for them, we will get a small commission, and that helps support the show. That is the best way to support Carrie and I and for everything we do on the podcast. We greatly appreciate that. Also, remember the sponsors, Instant House Call, go to instanthousecall.com. Magnus Box, go to magnusbox.com. And also, Fabs Auto Backup 7 Pro. Click on the link in the show notes. That's it on this fine Saturday. Hopefully, I will be back on Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Stay safe, everybody. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.